I've never moderated a talk during a concert. So this is definitely a nice challenge. Well, you have to adapt in changing world. I will also talk a bit about the structure of the talk. So I will introduce our two guests, and please forgive me if I read their bios, but I will be more precise that way. Then I will kindly ask them to present their work, their activity, their photographic approach. And then there will be a kind of question and answer session, which is, as Tobias mentioned, dynamic. So please feel free to ask. We will hand the microphone over to you so we can hear you. But please, like, approach it as a flexible event, and we would be very happy if the audience would ask questions and contribute. My name is Rona Kopecky. I'm a local crew. I work for ACB Gallery in Budapest. I am a curator, art historian. I'm not really a photo curator, but in my practice I have expressed a huge interest in contemporary photography, Hungarian photography, and also photography of the Central Eastern European region. And so that's the few context, the short context I wanted to introduce myself with. And now I will introduce Tobias and Peter in this order. So, Tobias Ziloni, you were born in 1973 in Wuppertal, Germany, and studied documentary photography at the University of Wales, Newport, before you continued with artistic photography at the Academy of Fine Arts Leipzig under Tim Reuter in 2001. You are known for your photographic depiction of juvenile minorities in suburban areas, a subject that you already set out during your studies in Newport. Themes and social realities in your research touches upon and include structural change, migration, and drug abuse, as well as sex work, as shown in the project Big Sexyland, developed between 2006 and 2008, as well as Jenny Jenny from 2013. For the project Manitoba from 2009-2011, you spent time with adolescents of indigenous origins living in Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba in Canada. In 2015, you participated at a group show for the German Pavilion at the 56th Venice Biennale, with your work entitled The Citizen from 2015. You had group shows at Beaux-Arts Center for Fine Arts in Brussels in 2015, and the second Montevideo Biennale in 2014, as well as solo shows at the Philadelphia Museum of Art in 2011 and Berlinische Galerie in 2013. You participated as well in the International Studio and Curatorial Program in New York and were awarded the Karl Ströher Prize in 2011. Peter Puklus, you were born in 1980.
Yes, correct.
Correct, so far. And you are currently living and working in Budapest, Hungary. You studied photography at the Moholy Nagy University of Art and Design in Budapest, which is called MOME, and also new media design at the École Nationale Supérieure de Création Industrielle in Paris. You are currently enrolled in the doctoral school of MOME, where you will support your thesis in 2020. In 2012, you published two photo books entitled 1.5 Meter with Kerer Berlag, Heidelberg, and Handbook to the Stars with Stokovets in Banská Štiavnica. In 2016, you published your third photo book, The Epic Love Story of a Warrior, in cooperation with Self Publish, Be Happy in London. And this title got shortlisted at the Aperture Paris Photo Book Award in 2016. Your recent solo exhibitions include Life is Techno at Trafo Gallery Budapest, new works at Konrad's Gallery in Düsseldorf, Unsafe to Dance in CO Berlin, 1.5 Meter in Robert Morad Gallery in Berlin, and the Epic Love Story of a Warrior at Kappa Center Budapest, as well as in Raster Gallery Warsaw. The most recent and still ongoing project of yours is entitled The Hero Mother, How to Build a House, which received the Grand Prix Image in Vevey, Switzerland for 2017 and 2018. The subject of the talk, it's entitled Identity As or Versus Intimacy. And I chose this title because I kind of identified a two-way movement in the works of our guests. So why Peter deals with personal and intimate subjects, such as friendship, family, motherhood, and fatherhood. He transcends them by conferring them a symbolic and universal validity. So while he operates in this direction, Tobias operates from another way. He confronts the identity of youth and subcultures around the globe in an attempt to reveal their structure, their rights, their staged positions, occasionally grasping personal narratives. The talk will then focus on the way these respective approaches differ, but also meet at some points. And maybe even intersect. So I will first ask Tobias, then Peter, to briefly present their activity and photographic approach, and then we will have a question and answer session. Thank you.
So thank you very much for the nice introductions, Ronnie, and I'm super happy to be here. Thank you to my Manu House and Phototraff and Goethe Institute. I will briefly run through some pictures. I guess we said about 10 minutes each. Huh? I hope we can manage. And as Ronnie said, I studied in the UK in Newport, and that these pictures here are from, it's only one picture, from my first series about kids hanging out in a car park I made in 2000. So it was almost 20 years ago, but that's where my whole kind of, not interest, but kind of, I started what I somehow still do today. And so I got interested in those kind of places where people hang out mostly at night and have nothing to do and just get into trouble and whatever, steal cars and so on. And at the time, I was still thinking it was a very specific British thing. But then when I went to Leipzig to continue my studies, and I decided I want to become an artist rather than a photojournalist, I was actually invited by a curator to do a project about people meeting at gas stations, like you see here, where people meet at night in East Germany, because they noticed that if cities are losing inhabitants, shops are closing down, the last thing standing is normally a gas station where you can buy gas or beer or chips or whatever. And also people use it as a hangout place. So in a sense, it's something very similar happening. And at the time, I was wondering, why is that? Why could it almost this picture be taken in France or in England and so on. And that's when I got started and went to a lot of different countries, and I will only show you a few examples. You have mentioned a few that they're all not in my PDF. So this is also part of their guest station series. And maybe already there, or maybe already before, I noticed that instead of being so interested in the documentary genre, I'm interested in film, and at the time still like music videos. How young people relate to that kind of aesthetics, like almost like this desire to be part of a movie or something bigger, especially when you're in a kind of small town where where nobody's interested in what you do. So fast forward to a place in California, Trona, in the desert, where it's a town famous for the production and use of crystal meth, the drug that we might know from Breaking Bad TV series. They came after I went there. I mean, they didn't film it in Trona, but the kind of same kind of drug culture. For me, it was unusual to photograph during daytime, because normally the darkness kind of closes up my pictures. You don't see where you are, it could be anywhere. But here, to me, the desert almost had the same effect. You kind of are claustrophobic in the middle of the vast landscape. And already you see something else that's coming up, that people are actually staging things for the camera. You know, when you study documentary photography, you still like work on that kind of dogma that you're objective and you just observe things that are happening anyway. And I have to say, I never believed in it from the beginning, but I get more and more open for people to just do things for the camera that they wanted or that I proposed. So it became this kind of communication. Cars are kind of running through my whole, not so much anymore, but have been for a long time a subject in my work, even if they're like broken down cars. Another subject are tracksuits, or it's like sportswear. I didn't choose the pictures to prove that. Then I did a big project on this housing estate that you might know from the film Gomorrah and the TV series. Also, I went there before it was produced, or almost at the same time. It's in Naples, Italy, as you might know. And it turned out that this guy I photographed there later became, in the Gomorrah movie, became one of the main characters. Maybe you recognize him. So there was also the moment where maybe I was, again, at the right place, at the right time, sensing something. But here it really became together, like my work and the kind of film world or the media world, you know. So. And here I'm already in the year 2014. It was a time when it was the summer before what was called the summer of migration, where a lot of even more refugees came to Europe at the time, 2015, mostly from Syria and Iraq. The years before, there was a strong movement of refugee activists in Germany and other countries fighting for their rights. In Germany, they were fighting for the right to move freely in the country, to choose their own location, to study and to work. It's been granted now, so Merkel somehow changed the laws. But it was a very strong political movement that went so far that people occupied a building in Berlin in 2014, like squatted it. And when the police arrived, they went on the roof and they threatened to jump down or to burn down the house. And it was kind of news all over the world. And the interesting story is that this guy here, Al-Nur, when he was standing on the roof, he got a phone call from his family in Sudan, and they said, "We've seen you on Al Jazeera TV. What are you doing in Germany? You're standing on the roof." So that was where the idea came from. Then what happens if the people are traveling here, but pictures and, of course, phone calls and other information are traveling back? So when I was invited into the German Pavilion for the Venice Biennial, I proposed that idea that I would photograph in Germany, but would publish in newspapers in the countries where the people, in this case, all African countries, where people are coming from or were coming from. So I approached a number of newspapers if they would like to feature my pictures. And I found writers, either local journalists, and like, let's say here from Uganda, or African writers living in Germany. And they would write the text. So it was really hard work. This is a newspaper from Sudan, and you might recognize here this picture, or maybe this one that I had taken. And it was kind of cooperation, cooperative work. And it was also a lot about losing control of my pictures. So like I said, what happens to my pictures if they appear in a very different context? What, you know, how do people lay out them? What is the text that I've written to go with them and so on? So it was also always a bit a surprise to get the newspapers sent back to Germany. Here they put my pictures on the right next to like a classical photo story. And I really loved that because that's how I started as a student. We were supposed to tell these kind of stories, you know, black and white, wide angle, you know, all the kind of different pictures. Okay. And then in Venice, in the German pavilion, I presented it like this. You see the whole newspaper, not only our articles, but also the rest of the newspaper, like sports, advertising, kind of, in a sense, recontextualizing the people's stories. It's, for me, super interesting. And on the wall, you see in a kind of magazine layout the pictures that I actually took. Of course, there's more to it, but I'm like rushing towards this project from Kiev that I did, that was came out 2 years ago with a book and so on and so on. Video, yeah. Anyway, so it's about I went there to photograph the kind of techno underground community in Kiev. I had met a woman in Germany who was from Kiev, and she invited me over. But more and more it became a portrait of the queer community in Kiev. Or let's say both communities are very, not one and the same, but kind of, meet in the same places. And the places are clubs, you know. It's quite dangerous, like, if you dress up or make up as a queen, as an openly queer person, to go on the street, you know. You might get beaten up within 10 minutes or something. So the nightclubs are one of the very few places where you could actually meet in a kind of semi-public environment. The work is called Maskirovka, which is a Russian word that means somehow camouflage, masquerade, masking. It comes from the word mask, obviously, but it's very much used to describe Russian military strategies, especially the ones that were used on Crimea Peninsula and in eastern Ukraine. Maybe you remember that soldiers with masks went to Crimea with machine guns, but they didn't have any Russian signs or something. They were saying, we're just here, we're volunteers. And in Ukraine, they call them the little green man. You know, this kind of hidden intervention. So in a way, I play with the idea of masks on all levels, like makeup, masks, party, questions of identity. But with using the title Maskirovka, I relate it to a kind of bigger political context. And this is almost the end. Quite briefly, I will go to the latest project of mine called Golden from Riga. I was invited to the Riga Biennial last year, and they invited me to do a new project. And it's a bit of a follow-up to the Kiev project. And I got interested in the way that people, especially young people, are using their bodies and their clothing, and then, of course, pictures of themselves that they put on Instagram and so on, as a kind of tool to construct your own idea of self or identity or even gender. So some things are pretty obvious, like makeup, you know, so it's very simple. But it's, of course, a very strong statement at the same time. Similar, like this girl not shaving her hair, even it's not a change to the body, it's not changing. Like not shaving like you're supposed to be, that is a kind of sign or symbol. And then some more like mainstream things like tattoos and kind of fashion. Okay, this is already Peta Puklush. So I think I was very fast.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. I guess we, if you have a direct question, can ask maybe now or later. Maybe we...
Anybody has a short question just right now? Yes? I will hand you the microphone.
Do you want to get your computer ready?
Yes, let's change.
I have a question about, for example, when you were going into like the techno scene of Kiev or those areas, how did you approach the people saying, hey, I want to take pictures of you? Because, you know, in maybe other places, that it's like, don't take pictures, no cameras, no phones, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, interestingly enough, I was with a friend who was part of the scene, so she would always like just take me to places. And nowadays, it's more easy to prove who you are, you know? You just Google yourself or you show your Instagram and people believe you, you know? Like 20 years ago, people would think I'm a policeman or whoever, you know? So it's a different... But it's in the one club I photographed in Kiev, it's normally not allowed to take pictures, like in Berghain. But I got the special permission. But it was still a problem because all the people there came to me and said, you know, it's not allowed here. And I said, yeah, but I have special permission. But it went on and on that I actually stopped. You know, so I have some pictures. This is from the outside the queue, you know. So. But no, it was easy. I mean, it's kind of transparent what I'm doing. And it was more difficult in the past, I have to say. Yeah. Okay, but maybe stop here and move to Peter.
Okay.
Should I?
Yeah, just let's. No, like we can change. Because you have the PDF.
You want to use it?
You know, we can use it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Or we can...
Oh, it's fine. Oh, do it like this.
Or we can do it like this as well.
But you have too many.
Yes, okay. Let's change place. So, hello, good evening. My name is Peter Puklush, and thank you very much also for the introduction and for inviting me here. Tonight, I would like to focus on my most recent and still ongoing project, which is entitled The Hero Mother, or How to Build a House, which I started about almost 3 years ago, let's say, when my second child, my daughter, was born in 2016. I will just show you some pictures randomly, so it's still an ongoing project, it's not closed, I don't really know how to finish it. I have like many, many questions towards myself about this project. But I can tell you some basics. The thing what happened is that when we went to the hospital and I wanted to like participate of the birth of my second child, I held the hand of my wife, and it took quite a long long labor, and I didn't really know what to do there, and I was like super, let's say, bored, because it was a long period where you can, as a man, you cannot do anything, like you are supposed to be a hand or a help, but it's no way you can help there as a future father or a father already. And I started to think about something, about actually this project, but I realized that I was a little bit somehow shocked because of the situation, not because of the blood or the pain, what I experienced or what I saw there, but mostly because of our future or because of my own future, like how me as a man will support this growing family, what is my actual role in the society, what I am supposed to do, how will we survive all these unknown situations, let's say. So I started to think about to do something, to create a work which at the beginning was a therapy for me, because I needed to somehow survive or somehow to help myself, let's say. And a couple of months later, there was an Austrian company who approached me. They wanted to commission me to do a project. It's called Wienerberger. This is a brick production company. This is one of the biggest company on the world. Nobody knows about them, but all the bricks what you see in the cities, it's produced by them. And they approached me to do a commission with them, and I proposed them this idea, which was a therapy for me at the beginning, and they really loved it, and we started to work together. So this is how this project started, and the first support what I got, it was this company producing bricks, and actually that was one of the pictures what they bought or what they had for the project. It talks about many, many things, many, many layers, mostly my background, even though the title is The Hero Mother, but it also can mean the hero father, and or how do we like survive and how do we contribute to the society as, like, let's say, normal people. I think it's very dangerous to say this word, but also it's about identity, like how do you identify yourself. So it has many messages, and I would like to, through this project, I would like to also face my own past and face my childhood and what happened during my childhood. I really love my parents, but now as I'm a father as well, I have to realize that not everything was as good as I remember. So it's also a therapy. Not against them, but also because of the situation. I think it was enough as a short introduction about my actual work, what I'm doing at the moment, and what I'm focusing now. And if you have any questions for now, you can ask it, or we can just step forward.
Anybody? Short. Direct question? No. Then I will start with mine.
Would you like to run it?
Yeah, I let it run now.
Yeah.
Well, you answered partially my first question with your latest project, but I would like to put it still, because I'm curious about your approach in a broader sense, and also Tobias's approach. So both of you are principally using the medium of photography, but neither of you do fit in like the strictly understood or limiting categorization of contemporary photography. Tobias, your work, you mentioned that it was presented in Venice Biennale, in Riga Biennale, in Montevideo Biennale, and also major institutions that are dedicated to contemporary art, let's say in its mediatic diversity. And Peter, you also use sculpture, you also use objects and settings to complete your photography-based projects. And I've heard you several times saying that you prefer defining yourself as a conceptual artist. So my first questions to both of you is, what does it mean for you to take photos?
Me? Okay, thank you. Well, yeah, I studied photography, so I'm a trained photographer. I have the diploma of being a photographer. And besides that, as you just told, I prefer to define myself as an artist. And it's mostly because I believe that the term photographer creates some borders around me and creates some restrictions, which I don't want to have, and I prefer freedom. And even though most of my works are based on photography, or we are talking about being an artist, and I only show photographs. You know, it's like it's somehow a paradox. It's somehow a contradiction. But I still believe that photography is only a tool. It's nothing more than that. It's like a piece of paper and a pen, and or anything else. And I believe that what really matters is the idea, what you would like to express, and what you would like to say or transmit to the audience or to the people, or even for yourself. And in most of the cases, photography fits very well for me. But there are some cases where it doesn't. And in these cases, I paint a painting, or I make a drawing, or I create sculptures or something. And sometimes I photograph them, and sometimes I exhibit the object, or only the photograph, or both. But it's about freedom. Like, yes.
It's about finding the best form.
Yeah, finding the best tool. And what I started to say with this project, which is the subtitle is How to Build a House. And when I started the project, while we had the second child, at the same time we also renovated the house where we are currently living in. And then I realized that it's to renovate a house or to build a house, it's somehow similar to my approach to art, is that you cannot build a house with one hammer only. So you need several tools, and several different tools are there for different tasks. And this is how I look at art as well, that if I want to build my house as my art, I need different tools to be able to do that.
Tobias, what does it mean for you to take a photo?
I also studied photography in many different places and ways, and I would say I still identify somehow with the role of a photographer. For me, it was, I think, more of a shift even, because I really studied to be this kind of documentary photographer. And the other guys I study with, they went to magazines and newspapers and tried to find jobs and so on. And I just had the feeling that this is not my world that I want to go into. And also this world doesn't really want me. The way I tell stories is not the traditional idea of storytelling. Ironically, with the project with the African newspapers, I finally did it, you know? So. But it took like almost 20 years or 15 to get there. And instead of like what other people might do, going to a poor country in Africa, take pictures and bring the pictures home, I reversed the direction. So I would say that I choose the art world, and I really mean the contemporary art world, out of instinct, because I had the feeling that gives me more freedom. I guess that's important, what Peter just said, and that there is more space for ambiguity and ambivalence that I like, and that I think is I need for myself, not for myself maybe, but for my artwork. But I want to add something also, that I think both of us, and that's my what I read in your work, but also in my work, is that we still deal with what photography could be, or what the role of photography or the photographer is. It's not like, I think we both don't want to abandon that. You know, we use it as a tool or as a kind of reference or history or technique, but I, you know, it's I'm far from giving it up to still use a camera. You know, so I guess it's like investigating what it actually is today, you know, which is getting more and more complicated to use photography and the camera.
I recently read an interview with you. It was published on the website of Collector's Agenda. And in relation to the fact that you realize these very sensitive visual studies of teenagers or young people, subcultures and socially disadvantaged people, your interlocutor used the term participating observation.
I didn't use that.
No, not you, your interlocutor.
Ah, okay.
the person who asked you questions. And so just for the public to know, participating observation is one type of data collecting method that is typically used in ethnography, cultural anthropology, human geography, and social psychology, end of the note. And your interlocutor also used the term documentarian approach. In relation to your work, you mentioned this ambiguity just before I asked the second question. The way that you are somehow approaching getting close to unknown groups, unknown people, getting their confidence, letting them open up or not. I mean, I guess it's depending on the case, but do you agree with these terms?
Yeah, I can't remember what I answered in that interview, but I'm asked it a lot, and each time I'm like, okay, I have to clarify this. You know, I'm not a documentary photographer, and maybe my work is relating to it or referring to it, but I don't see myself as a documentary photographer. And the same goes to the participative observation. No? It's a term from ethnology, yeah, or anthropology. Yeah, I mean, there is a certain truth to it, so that's also why people come up with it. But there's a few things. First, I would say that these kind of terms or genres are defined not only by what I'm doing, but also by the context in which my work is seen or presented or exhibited. You know, so if I put my work in a newspaper, it becomes journalistic. If I put it into an anthropology book, maybe it changes his idea. So by choosing the art context, I try to avoid those things. And I think it's why people use those terms. It's a desire to clarify things that are more and more difficult to clarify. You know, to understand, to believe there is a world out there. And here comes the photographer, he takes a picture, and that is representing that world. You know, I think we all agree that this doesn't work like this anymore. I mean, I'm not talking about objectivity. It's just that I even think that the world and the pictures and the role of the person who takes the pictures, they are all kind of merging. And, you know, I'm just part of a bigger process in that kind of thing. So, yeah. I understand why people ask those questions, but I always have the kind of job of explaining and The problem with that is you ask a simple question, are you a documentary photographer? And you have to answer with a 10-minute answer, you know. So, so yeah, I spare you.
In both of your short visual introductions, in your case, Tobias, we saw more kind of found scenes, found images, while what I saw in your material, Peter, were more staged photos, constructed scenes. What I would like to ask you, ask both of you, is how do you define, approach the moments, the models of the scenes that you are photographing, and how do you balance between found images and created, staged images? And this then connects to how you balance between, let's say, very, how to say, squarely formulated between truth and fiction, and between closeness and distance.
Before I answer the question, I think I have to tell a short story about me when I was, I think I was an Erasmus student in Paris, and it was in 2003 or something. So it was like really the beginning of the digital photography era. And I bought my 1-megapixel camera before I went there, and I imagined myself that I will become the Henri Cartier-Bresson of the digital era. And so I started, I was like Tobias Iannone, photographing people on the street, mm-hmm. not in a documentary approach, obviously, but I was super interested in the street and the everyday and average people, I did my job. And then one day I went to a fun park, you know, where you have all these things for kids, and I photographed two little boys. And probably you remember that this was also the age of these pedophilia scandals across Western Europe. And the mother of these boys found it out that I was photographing her sons, and she started a huge scandal, and people like almost lynched me on the spot. Like it was like, I don't know, 50 people around me, and they broke my camera, they bit me, they hit me on the face and everything. And then finally the police came and finally could like show my student card from the art school, you know, that I'm an art student, and these people are like hitting me, and they told me that just leave the area, go home. And I went home and I closed the shutters and I didn't leave the house for 3 days, and I decided not to work on the street anymore. And
I did that a few years earlier, and got, no kids, just guys on the street in Berlin, and I got into a few fights, and then I stopped the, like, photographing people without asking.
Yeah.
So that was 98 or something, yeah. So that was my Cartier-Bresson moment.
So I think somehow this is the basement of my staged work, like planning, asking, planning again, asking again, to make people comfortable with the situation and using their consciousness to be able to cooperate and to be able to be able to participate with me and with the situation. So even though you see or you think that there are some images which are not staged, most of them are staged, and I'm somehow trying to play in between. So it's like dancing on a border. Not in many cases, but in some cases I do this. So for example, this is a very staged image. but it also looks like it can be a snapshot as well. But it is built of I think 40 images, and it's photoshopped, and it was like a long project, a couple of hours while we did this with the family. But it could be on your phone, you know, as a snapshot and just a moment somehow.
And you, Tobias, what you showed us so far, it looked so spontaneous and like moments that you just encountered. What is the proportion of these staged and found images in your practice?
Mm-hmm. First I'd like to add that maybe after my experience on the street, I didn't go so far like you. But still, it was like an eye-opener to me to talk to strangers instead of just photographing them secretly. You know, to on the street and later like in all kinds of places. You know, so maybe I didn't do the 180-degree turn, but 90-degree. In the more recent project, to me, it doesn't feel like I don't feel the difference anymore, you know. So, because I think from the beginning, if I turn up somewhere and talk to people and ask them if I can photograph them or hang out with them, something is changing, you know, because I'm there and because people start imagining the pictures. When it was still analog, they were imagining the pictures that they couldn't see. Like you as a photographer, you hope this picture looks like that, you know. Now it's, of course, faster. Eh? You can show the photo on your camera and something. But still, I think it's this kind of idea of a shared imagination of what you would like to be for the picture that I'm interested in. And it's kind of boundless. You know, here this was like in the apartment I had rented in Kiev, and I asked people over for a little party, and I took pictures, some more staged, some more like really when they were smoking a cigarette. And then I organized a party where I asked people to come with masks. Already the whole mask idea was kind of my idea, you know? People picked up on it quickly and they loved it, but so it's but where you know, so the guy he saw the mask, he put it on, you know? So it's like, where do you ask, you know, where does it start, you know? And I think that it's not just random. I think it has a lot to do with our life, and especially the life of like young generation, about their idea of themselves and of how they want to be seen or depicted. You know, so in a sense, it's documentary, you could say, because it talks about life, but not about like what people are doing anyway. You know, like Peter, he's not waiting for his family to do the crazy thing, you know, like climb. He's constructing it, you know. But maybe
but it's happening there and it's...
I believe you, right? Yeah. I was just trying to find some. Yeah, I mean, each picture has a story, but maybe that is an answer.
Yes, and exactly in relation with that, the people that you are photographing, Tobias, either these, for example, the drag queens or young people or even teenagers, they all somehow radiate this sense of instability, like flowing between, let's say, childhood, adulthood, female, male identity, fluid genders. So there is this kind of dynamic and big question mark, like where does it stabilize, where does it stop? And in your case, Peter, you are documenting basically the way your family evolves, the way your family grows, the way your own role as a father expands and changes. So you're also documenting a change outside and inside. So how do you both relate to observed and experienced instability or change?
Instability.
You go first now.
Yeah, that was quite interesting for me now to think about it, that I'm really drawn to that situation that are maybe not settled yet. You know, like where when you're young, it's mostly automatic nowadays that you're like, haven't decided yet what to do, or you kind of don't want to do what you're asked to do from the teachers or parents or whatever, society. So it's this kind of time of, you know, dynamics. Or you have a very, like in Ukraine, like a politically very unstable situation, you know, like really the people I photographed, they had no money and they really live from day to day, you know, so really this kind of feeling even got in, like I kind of, it, you know, I felt it too, you know, somehow. So I guess normally you would say the end to that instability is a family, you know, when you settle down. But of course, you might even say the other way around, you know, then the big, the next big questions arrive, you know. So that was kind of mind opening for me. Yeah, in my case, it's, yeah, I'm not in the pictures, you know, you don't see me. There are very few works where you actually see me, or, you know. So probably I kind of look for something that I have experienced, or I'm looking for myself in with other people, you know, or there's this kind of exchange of possibilities with other people. So maybe I put it that way.
Yeah, I think in my case there is an interesting journey, or there is the documentation of a very interesting journey, is that shortly, probably I would say, is that when I realized that I'm not that strong man who I'm supposed to be, and I started to be able to tell it, and I started to be like facing this situation, or this moment when I realized that this guy who is here is not the same person as a man who is supposed to be, like, from the view of the society, which affects me a lot, or from the view of the commercialized media, and it's okay to be weak and things like that. It's a very, very hard journey, actually, and it's in my case, I think this is also part of this therapy, which helps me a lot, not only because of the in relation to the family, but mostly in relation with myself, and yeah, and I'm happy that I'm able to express this towards the public or to the audience. But I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well, yes, to some extent. In one of your interviews, you were developing on the fact that becoming a father and evolving as a father, growing up as a father, and so starting from the point of being a lover, then a husband, then a father of one, then a father of two, then having to build constantly this house is raising a lot of questions, a lot of doubts, and also probably a lot of fears, not to be able to keep your position. So I think you answered the question.
Okay.
Thank you. And also connected to that, you were mentioning in that interview that your works are about yourself. This was also in an interview or in a talk that Fototref organized.
Yes.
For me, this is really obvious in relation to your work, but I would be curious to, I would be happy, glad to hear Tobias's comment on that. Where are you in your photos, and how deep is personal involvement with your photographic approach, and especially, As we maybe mentioned it, you have this broader interest for margins or marginal groups or marginal people. And how does this interest for margins connect with center. So you as the initiator of the picture, you as the initiator of the photographic exploration and the gaze.
Yeah, so first I'd like to say I also have a problem with the margin word, you know, because, I mean, it's obviously that society, and especially capitalism, is creating losers and winners in a sense. That's, I think, where capitalism is based on, you know, so that, and then the idea of maybe neoliberalism is to say if you're losing out, you don't make much enough money, it's your own fault, you know, so, and you feel guilty for it, and you work harder or whatever. Yeah, so I think there's still like a political attempt that I have to say it's not as easy as, you know, as that, you know, so society should be organized in a different way. But when you, for example, look at the work from Kiev, you could say there are like people who are in within Kiev, the kind of colorful, crazy outsiders, you know, compared to maybe 95% of the rest of the society. But on the other hand, you could say they are the ones that are the most interesting one, or the, you know, the most daring, the most whatever, fashionable, cool kids, you know, so that that create a lot of interest. Even I remember that in Berlin, people were very curious about what's going on in Kiev. So in that sense, they're maybe marginalized in an old sense of rich and poor and power relations, you know, but they still might be in the center of a lot of other things. So I don't really think that we can, that this is so helpful in the end, this term margin or, yeah, whatever. So I'm also spend time questioning it a little bit, you know, so. But the other question was about myself. And yeah, as I said, it's a very different approach that I mean, very rarely photograph my own family or my friends or myself, but still, I mean, it, maybe it's hard to believe, but I remember when I made my first exhibition that I felt like so embarrassed to be in the same room as my pictures because I thought I put something of myself out there, you know, like really, like emotionally or physically even. Now I'm getting used to it and I just stand in the corner and have a glass of wine or something. But, you know, so there, for me, there is something, a lot of myself in it, somehow. And I think, of course, it's also the result of the process that I have with the people that can, that I meet, that I talk to, that maybe on levels that are not spoken, I communicate with, you know, with body language and so on. So. Yeah, which thing is very personal, but it's harder to argue, I would say, in this respect. And it's also weird, like there was a big, of course we know that the kind of criticism of photography and especially documentary photography, of showing the other, othering, exotizing, you know, and I think it there was good reason for that critique, and that's why a lot of people turned to their own bodies, their own families, or Eric Kessel, you know, like Nan Golding, Wolfgang Tillmans, you know, that has been very accepted. But for some reason, I thought, no, I want to continue this kind of going into the world and meet new people and so on. You know, both, I think it was both like a political idea, but also maybe just my personal idea of how I want to live or adventure or something. Open the question? Yeah.
Open up the questions. Before we open up the questions, I have one last thing that I would like to ask you. You mentioned that you had already some traumatic experiences with, like, not asking people about taking photos and then being in a pretty embarrassing situation. Except that, what was the most difficult photo that you ever shot?
Difficult.
Yes.
Look, the hammer difficult to me.
Well, probably I wouldn't just pick up one picture. There are some, for example, in this case, like the lamp is pretty easy, and the hammer is like super difficult because I had to construct and find out how it will fly in the air. But these are technical questions. The thing what I realized in my practice is, not in most of the cases, but in many cases, what I experienced is that the most, the more energy or the more effort I bring into a situation, the better the picture will become. It's not always true. Sometimes it's garbage, but there is some kind of connection between invested amount of work and results. I think it's not surprising at all, but yeah. Probably one image which is yeah, this one, the brick is like, but it's also a technical thing. Mm. It's not because of like photographically it's not difficult, but to build it in the space in yeah, it took me like 2 days to do it, but it's I really don't want to just pick up one picture, because I think it's more like an approach somehow.
And you, Tobias?
Yeah, there could be. I agree with Peter that I think to create some work, I get into this kind of weird intensive mode. It is also very exhausting, also physically. Like when I was in Ukraine, I remember I was so tired every night sleeping, or if I could actually sleep, you know. So, but technically, I don't have so many problems really. I kind of solved a lot of them, especially the biggest problem in the beginning was the darkness that I had to kind of work with a tripod or whatever. And movement, and then of course I was in a lot of dangerous situations, so that would probably be the what I would think for myself, like in this place in Naples or in the desert in Trona, when I was really sometimes fearing for my life, you know. So, but I don't think that necessarily that creates a better picture or something, you know. And I try to make my pictures don't look like they have been made in a precarious situation, actually. You know, I'm not showing off the danger or something. And nowadays I'm a bit more, I don't want to lose my life for a photo in it, you know. I'm too old for that now.
Thank you very much. Dear public, is there anything that we missed or that you feel should be addressed or that you are still curious to hear about or to hear more details about?
Claudia?
I would like to ask Tobias if you can talk about your video work in relation to your photography and how you value it.
Yeah, I didn't show it today because we only had 10 minutes each, and my shortest video is 3 minutes. Longest is 10 minutes. I mean, I could have chosen that. Yeah, I started actually in maybe even before doing videos, and I do a lot of animations that are made out of single images. And for some reason, my teacher, Tim Rauter, he always said, you're so close to film in your work, why don't you make a film some point? And I was kind of like, maybe a lot of photographers, I felt very awkward, you know, because with a sudden, you have so many possibilities when you move with a camera. It's not like one, it's like hundreds of images. In a sense, maybe that's why I started doing these animations that are actually hundreds and thousands of images that are running, you know, like early movies. But I have to say, maybe because I spent so much time in my life with photography, that video is kind of easier for me because I don't feel the burden of the history of film, for example, so much. When you study film, you have to learn so much and make all these kind of weird little student films that maybe you end up feeling obstructed. So video for me is kind of more fun and easy and faster. But another observation is that it really helped my standing in the contemporary art world, because I'm not only the photographer, I also work with video. And it kind of changes the perception of people. It's kind of weird. Also, it's for me, I mean, I think it's always a bit boring to put so many framed images on a wall. And I like to have an exhibition where there's also a dark room where you should look at a video, you can sit down, or, you know, I just love doing it somehow. But most of the video works are related to photography project. So I do the research with the stills and get to know people, and it can take months and months, and then sometimes the video I do in 1 or 2 days. Because, you know, but at the end of it. So, yeah, so as I said, I mean, if you go on Wikipedia, you read I'm a filmmaker, you know, for some reason. Whoever writes these things wrote down, at least in German Wikipedia, I'm a filmmaker, you know, and I can live with it, you know. So. Even though it's a smaller part of my work and also of the money. I mean, it's so difficult to make money with video art. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that was your question. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a question. Please tell us who were the three artists of who inspired you when you start the study of the photograph.
Peter,
Tobias.
For you is Cartier-Bresson, Robert Capa,
André Curtis. Easy.
For me is August Landa, Wolfgang Tillmans. It's actually true. Yeah, August Sander I liked a lot, and Wolfgang Tillmans was kind of, it's a bit older than me, and he was really like changing my idea of what photography is and what it could be. It was kind of liberating, you know, so mixing genres, showing them in a different way, and so on. And then there's all the color photographers from the US mostly, like Willie Magerson, or then the people who work with people like Diane Arbus. Yeah, so I guess it's pretty much not so surprising. Nan Golding, of course, you know. So Paul Graham, yeah, it's pretty much what you expect. And Michael Schmidt, I have to mention, Berlin photographer that I was happy to meet. He was one of my big heroes. Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, I think my list would be more or less the same. It's nothing, no surprise here. And also with Wolfgang Tillmans, the only thing what I would like to mention is that there was a moment when I saw one of his pictures, which is not that famous. Actually, you see a sofa, a corner of a sofa, and there are socks on mm-hmm. the sofa. And this is, when I saw this picture, that was the moment when I realized that you can photograph like anything, and you can be like an artist using any kind of topics. And I was like quite small, but that was the moment. And he was the person who gave me this revelation.
Problem was a little bit that like a whole generation of students, our generation probably, thought the same, you know? They could just photograph everything and anything. It would be interesting and amazing. Yeah.
Okay, are there some more questions?
Yes,
I saw some
two.
Hands going up.
Here? I see you. Yes, yeah, fine.
I wanted to ask you that you, so most of the topics that we saw from you were very social, like immigrants, Naples, political situation in Kiev. And as a person who's not a documentarian and not a photojournalist, how much of an artist's life is social responsibility? How much you feel like in today's world you have to address all this stuff, even though you are absolutely liberated from it as a non-documentarian?
Yeah, I mean, we are not liberated from it, I think, as a whole. I mean, as a person.
Yes.
But it's true, actually. And it's kind of weird that in the moment I was invited to the German Pavilion, that was kind of the peak of my career so far. But of course, it's like the most amazing thing that can happen to you, yeah, as an artist. Instead of doing the thing I had done for a long time, I thought it's the time to do something that is a lot more political and a lot less, let's say, showing off how great I am as a photographer. So there was a moment actually in time when I thought I have this responsibility. And we also printed 50,000 copies of a newspaper with texts and images for people to take away. I didn't show here. So. Yeah, in a sense, and it's interesting also Wolfgang Tillmans, we mentioned that he's kind of campaigning for European Union elections, and he was campaigning against Brexit, you know, with posters that you can print out, and now T-shirts you can put on. I did that on for Instagram. That even him, that where you would think he's very political, but not in an, like, maybe as obvious way as I am, realized it's time to do something, you know, and use the kind of little power that we have as an artist, or, you know, the reach to do something, even if it's European Union, that doesn't sound so radical or something, you know, so maybe in Hungary. But, yeah, and it was funny, on Sunday at the election night for the European elections, I walked through Berlin and I met Wolfgang, but he is currently in a wheelchair, he has a broken leg. So a guy pushed the wheelchair, and he had his European Union election T-shirt on, and the guy also. So I passed him and said, "Hi, Wolfgang, how are you doing? Did you go to vote?" He said, "Yes." "And you?" And I said, "Yes." And then we did this, and then he passed. So, but maybe it's a good, I mean, it, you know, it's something very simple he's doing, you know, but I think, I think it's more and more important. It's more the opposite question. Can we be an artist now without having the urge to do something, you know, without the responsibility? Of course, we have to be very realistic about what we can actually achieve, you know. Yeah, so.
There were some more questions coming up here.
You said you made a party to make photos of people.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you feel more in control in this situation, or you prefer to go to other person party to make the photo, or you see yourself more in your party?
I actually made three parties in Kiev.
Okay.
It was also a way of actually getting some pictures somehow, you know. So the first, because there were only the two clubs, and when I was there was no party happening, and then we came up with the idea we just have to do our own party. But it's not like a new idea in Kiev, because people just do their own parties. And then this one here was in my apartment. It was not really a party. Tasha, my friend who helped me, just invited people over without even asking me. You know, there were 20 people, and I went out to buy some drinks and so on, you know. But actually, I took a lot of nice pictures in the moment. And it was very cold outside, so it was not like you could just go out with people to take pictures, you know. So, but for me, it doesn't really matter so much if it's my own party or someone else's party. Yeah. But it's not my common way of working.
Peter mentioned that he was having a bit of trouble finishing the current project, so I was wondering about that aspect of the creative process, like how do you do that? And maybe Tobias has some very practical advice on
that. Well, first of all, I don't really know where it ends, but I think we, like artists, all struggle with this question, like when you stop, when do you stop? It's like, is it enough, or do you need like 100 more pictures, or it's done already, or whatever? It's like with life. The thing is probably the most important question here is that what is the general message of this project? So what I would like to transmit or send, and since I am saying that I'm not finished with the project, I keep myself the position of not answering this question yet, because this is on the safe side for the moment. But I know that I would like to, or I have to, like close it pretty soon, and to decide a direction, which can be like, I think there are many possibilities for now, how to finish it or how to wrap it up, but yeah, soon.
Thanks a lot, and thanks a lot for all the three.
Thank you. Thank you.